Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. But it's about dealing with energy in your everyday life, just whatever you happen to be doing in your life. So it's about energy. It's on the same kind of wavelength, but just a different format. So please stay with us. My name is Brenda, and I'm a professional coach, and this is the Meeting Brenda Speed Coaching Program. And my goal is to help you create a life that really works, because my passion is helping people transform their lives into one they really love, not one that's just okay. First, I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. I've wanted to do a coaching program for a couple of years, and it's been a really interesting process because I actually registered this domain name in 2003, and what I thought I would be doing was more kind of in an entertainment vein, that I would be putting two director's chairs on the street and having someone film it and just interview strangers, because I love meeting new people, and I think by the end of the show you'll be able to tell that I love to talk. But now it's 2010, and I'm on the air, which is a totally different thing that I expected I'd be doing. And some things take time, and then what I know from experience, they don't even look the way you thought they would. But that's the fun of being open to new things and always being flexible, because when you're inflexible, you know, that really holds you back. And the universe has much better ideas than I do, because what I had imagined probably wouldn't have lasted very long and been especially helpful. But this project that I'm doing right now, I think will provide a lot of satisfaction for me and others as well. The type of coaching I do is described as I'm a core energy coach, and I'm able to tell where you are energetically and what needs to happen for you to shift it into a better place. And there's many different levels of energy that you're in every day, and certainly on a weekly and monthly basis. And you might think back at some point in your life where you felt like you were kind of the victim, where nothing was going well. You felt kind of hopeless. Maybe you actually had some self-esteem problems at that time. I'm probably kind of describing what goes on when you're a teenager, actually. But, you know, you don't have to stay there. That's not where you have to be all the time. And when you're in that situation, you can easily, people can help you because they feel sorry for you. And they might go out of their way to help you, and then you really have no motivation to change where you are energetically. Now, I had an example this week of being a victim. Actually, it was probably for about half the day, because I was driving in the morning early on Thanksgiving and hit a patch of black ice and watched myself kind of from afar, sliding into, there were like 20 cars crashed, three police cars. It was a big mess. But somehow, miraculously, I don't know what happened, but I got through it. But the entire rest of the day, I was feeling, woe is me. Look what almost happened. I almost got hurt. My car, you know, almost got broken. And I have been in a car accident before and was seriously injured. So I knew what would happen with all that. So on the way home, after the ice had melted and, you know, I had been distracted for the better part of the day, I started going over it again and imagining it in my mind and, you know, telling myself what could have happened and that sort of thing. And I actually started getting a little teary-eyed again. And then I thought, what am I nuts? It's Thanksgiving. And nothing happened. I it was a miracle. I didn't get hurt. Nothing happened. I wasn't in the big jam-up. So, you know, I quickly shifted my thinking from being the victim to feeling that was like one of the luckiest days of my life, and boy, am I happy about that. So I didn't really even want to talk about it, although I did put it on my Facebook page, and people did think I got hurt, so I'm never going to do that again. But that's an example of, you know, I spent half my day dwelling on it and kind of rehashing it in my brain, because you do get something out of that, but it's definitely not a good feeling. So I got over it. The next level of energy is when people are always angry. These are the people that, you know, honk at you and zoom around you in the, you know, in the side of the road just to get around you because they think you're doing something wrong or going too slow or whatnot. And these people are always crabby. They're so impatient. They're just angry at the world in general. They're the kind of people who think that other people get advantages and they don't. They're the kind of people who think people have it in for them, especially their boss and maybe their spouse. They're just really unpleasant to people to be around, and they will make you miserable if you spend too much time around them. But the good news is you really don't have to always, and unless they're, you know, really in your face. So those are those people that you really want to stay away from. So unfortunately, the main kind of energy that you encounter every day are one of these two types. They're either people who are in the black cloud where everything, you know, it's just following them around, and, you know, they're accident prone or whatever. They're just, you know, you can just see them coming, their trouble. But you do tend to feel a little bit sorry for them. And then the other people that you're around a lot of the time are people that are very angry, and that's not pleasant either. But it is better to be angry than be a victim. So if you can, you know, shift a little bit and at least get out of the victim mode into that you're pissed at the world, that's actually a better energetically. And we do all know people who function at a higher level, and they're those really nice people who are forgiving and compassionate. They're concerned about others, and they're really the people who take responsibility for their actions, and they're not playing the blame game. They realize that whatever happened, they were involved in it. They had something to do with it. So they do take responsibility for their actions and so on. But the good news is that we can all get to a higher level of energy by really working on it, and certainly using a coach like myself to help you realize where you are energetically and where you'd like to be. So I'm curious as to where the audience thinks they are right now, if they have a tendency either today or just in general to be one of those two people, or if they're the people that really do take responsibility for their actions. So just kind of make a mental note of where you think you are right now. And if you'd like to call in and tell us about it, that would be great. I am going to take a short break, and my guest coach is going to be with me tonight, and her name is Tom Berlane. She specializes in working with people who live with chronic illness. And I think I'm not going to say there's an epidemic of chronic illness, but there certainly are many people that we know personally or just in general that suffer from some type of chronic illness, and their lives sometimes aren't that great. And what Tombra does is really get people to, I'm not sure how she does it, she'll tell us this, but she is able to help them live a better life than you would expect. I want you to write down these call-in numbers for tonight. Area code 415-287-0074. Another number is 530-413-4520. And there's also a feature, if you are online right now, there's a feature on the website called Fast Chat, and you type in a message. You don't have to give your real name or anything. So if you're shy, you can type that in, and I'll be able to see it, and we can talk to you about it without you having to call in. But certainly I'd love to have you call in and visit with us. So we'll be coming back with my guest coach, Tom Berlane, and have a really good conversation about chronic illness and how to live a better life. Be right back. Thanks. everyone. This is the Meeting Brenda Speed Coaching Show, and we're back now. And I have a guest tonight, and her name is Tambra Lane. She's from Los Angeles. Welcome.
Thank you, Brenda. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight.
That's great. Well, would you like to share a little bit with the audience about yourself? And I mean, I've learned something about you today that I thought was, I mean, you have a really interesting background, but also about your coaching practice.
Absolutely. Yes, it's been quite a journey. My original career and the last 20 years of my life I spent working in the film industry in Hollywood, which was an extraordinary experience. And along the way, I met and married a wonderful man, and that obviously was life-changing as well. What brought me to coaching over a period of the last 10 years of working through a lot of things was that at one point in our marriage, he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease. And so I became his full-time caregiver. And at the time, we were both working in the industry, and I was also running his production department. And we basically had to find a way to make our lives work while he was coping with the cancer diagnosis first, mm-hmm. and then 3 years of treatment. And ultimately, I did lose him to the cancer. Thank you. Yes, he was a wonderful man. We had an incredible marriage, and I feel very blessed to have had the 10 years with him that I did. And he was really the inspiration for me to find a way to really make a difference for other people. Like I said, the film industry is very fascinating, and you meet lots of interesting people, extremely creative. However, I just felt like I wasn't making a significant difference in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I also recognized that the journey I went through to recover from the loss was extremely difficult, and I felt like I had to find a lot of my own tools. And it took quite a bit of time for me to be able to reconstruct a life that had meaning.
Mm-hmm.
So that became really my main focus, and I started to write a memoir about my experiences of recreating my life after loss, and went on from there to really start to seek out a modality that I could use to work with others so that they could maybe tap into some of my experience and certainly a model or an approach that would give them the tools and resources to be able to cope with some of life's major challenges and transitions, one mm-hmm. of which we'll talk about tonight, which is, you know, chronic illness diagnosis.
Well, and did you feel like you had a lot of support when you were in the situation of, I mean, you went through more than, it's like a series of events because your husband was diagnosed and he was ill, but he wasn't, you know, he didn't die right away. You went through a long chunk of time where you were supporting him and taking care of him and whatnot. Did you feel like you had a lot of resources then?
I didn't. Uh-huh. One of his choices was that he wanted to continue to work while he was going through treatment. And in an industry like the film business, if you want to do something like that, you keep it a secret.
Oh.
And very large part of our circle of friends were people we worked with. So I was automatically isolated at a very early stage in the game. There were very few people who knew that he had cancer, probably until the very end.
Mm. Well, that
created
really
some isolation.
Yeah. That's a really unusual situation. You know,
yeah,
it is. Because usually your friends and family just rally, you know, your coworkers and everybody's, you know, really out there helping you, and you were in a really odd situation there.
Yes, and we were lucky. We had a few selective close people in the business we could trust with the information, mm-hmm. and they were incredibly supportive for Gary. And there tends to be a pattern of focusing on, you know, the person with the illness and the diagnosis, and rightly so. That's an incredible mm-hmm. burden to bear, and there's a lot of implications in proceeding forward in a life when you're dealing with the physical toll and the mm-hmm. emotional toll that takes on you. However, there's an un, unforeseen symptom or side effect for the caregiver as well. Mm-hmm. And often we're expected, or we expect of ourselves to show up constantly as the support and as the strong one and as the clear-headed one or as the one, you know, helping to make the decisions or doing the research or interfacing with the medical team to try to sometimes protect our loved one from hearing, you know, too much or worrying too much. So that becomes a challenge. And I feel like Gary was diagnosed in 1998. I feel like since that time there has been extraordinary forward progress in the resources that are out there for both those being diagnosed with illness, going through treatment, and now survivorship programs are really beginning to receive support and resources, and as well the caregivers. However, you still have to know to reach out for those things.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jan, I mean, if he didn't have you, you know, how would that have worked? It wouldn't have.
I really do feel like part of our path as a couple was for me to be there to care for him.
Uh-huh.
And that was part of the gift that I was bringing to the relationship. And I feel like he made it through as well as he did for as long as he did because we had that connection and that caring for each other, but then also because he had quality care from me and help from me that he could count on. So absolutely,
Go ahead, finish.
I was just going to say, I can't imagine him having to go through that on his own. I certainly wouldn't wish that on anyone.
No, I can't imagine. And how did he, talking about living with a chronic illness, I mean, how did he, men and women, I think, are so different when they deal with something like that. How would you describe him? I mean, was he, I'm going to get this, I'm going to beat this? I mean, what was his, especially if he had to be somewhat secretive about it?
Gary was a very pragmatic thinker, and he was a very good researcher and somebody who knew how to manage a project. So he kind of created it as a project. And, you know, we did a lot of the work together with the research. But ultimately, he was making his own decisions. And one of the key decisions that he made was that while he was managing an illness, that was only one piece of his life. And he was very adamant about not feeling like a victim to the illness, not giving up certain standards of lifestyle, not giving up his work. And we, like, work-wise, we actually went in and redesigned his whole work process so that he would have the energy in the day to be able to get through from beginning to end, given that he couldn't work the length of hours that he normally did. So we got very creative with things. Uh-huh. But ultimately, what was most inspirational about Gary was his desire to live a life no matter what. So no matter what the test results came back with, no matter what symptoms he was dealing with, and some of them were pretty severe at times, he found a way to also include life with that.
Well, that does make that's a whole different mindset compared to how a lot of people deal with chronic illness. They're just, they're angry and, it screwed up their life, and they're gonna be miserable about it, and probably a lot of other people miserable at the same time.
I feel like it's common to go through a lot of those feelings, and certainly there were points where I was angry about what we were losing.
Right.
Definitely, we lost bits and pieces of him along the way. And, we lost aspects of our marriage along the way. And there was a point where we really had to do a lot of hard work to stay on track with each other and stay committed. Because it's challenging. There's a lot of physical stress. There's a lot of emotional stress. There's that roller coaster.
So
it's understandable at times to feel victimized or like nothing's working or angry or ask why me.
Right.
It just becomes about how much energy are you going to give to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to honor those feelings, and we certainly each together and separately had those moments. And there were times where we just had to agree that some days, we used to say, you know, this is just one of those days
that
sucks.
Oh, dear. Well, how has this translated into your, you know, working? I mean, what types of, I guess, chronic illness clients are you working with right now?
I've done some coaching with multiple sclerosis
uh-huh.
patients on stress reduction techniques.
Uh-huh.
And also inspired living in the modality that I'm trained in, which is through the school IPEC, the Institute for Professional Excellence in Coaching.
Mm-hmm.
The underlying modality is called energy leadership. And we identify seven different levels of energy that people interact with themselves and with the world at large. And interestingly enough, the lowest level is victim thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the next second level is anger and internal external conflict. And as you move up, you begin to move into qualities like responsibility and compassion. And so we learn to navigate those energy levels. Well, one of the things that you come to see when you start to study the energy levels is that when you're stuck down in the lower energy levels, you really do drain your physical energy. And for people with chronic illness diagnosis, or even caregivers who are putting a lot of time and effort into that, it's really key to notice when you've fallen into those lower energies and then begin to be able to shift yourself out of it so that you don't lose what available, you know, energy you
mm-hmm.
have. So it really becomes a process of reframing the
mm-hmm.
experience. We're looking at a situation a lot of times. I'm also coaching cancer survivors. And in these cases, we're looking at situations where we can't necessarily change the circumstance. The day is unfolding as it is. The
mm-hmm.
illness is unfolding as it is. And there's a whole medical team in place addressing those aspects of the illness.
Uh-huh.
The only place that we have to really participate and take control is how we respond to the situation. So this is how I start to... Sorry,
yeah, because, well, you know, what's interesting is I had described at the beginning of the show something that happened to me on Thursday, and I was in the woe is me, pathetic, feeling sorry for myself mode, and then I realized that it was like, whoa, boy, you dodged a bullet here. This is like your lucky day. So I was very aware that I was staying a victim. And then I realized that, you know what, this is like the best thing that's happened to me in a long time. So I'm aware of it, but it's just human nature to get stuck in that situation, that's for sure. And when you mentioned MS, I mean, I know a lot of women with MS. And the difficult thing I think about that chronic disease is that it waxes and wanes. You know, you can have a crisis and be in a wheelchair, and then you could be walking 6 months later. So I think it must be a real emotional roller coaster dealing with an illness like that. That's not, I'm going to say, more routine. You know what I mean? In a certain way.
Yes, it's a very individualized experience.
Mm-hmm.
So it really does come down to the individual working, you know, through their experience of it.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a lesson in that for all of us. There's a
mm-hmm.
lesson in that for people suffering from other chronic illnesses.
Right.
Even where there is a more standardized view of how that illness goes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is to still come from the standpoint of you don't know. That, you know, anything is possible, and staying open to the possibility that perhaps you won't be the person that loses their hair from chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
It's a possibility, and it's great to be prepared
right.
emotionally and you know, however. But like Gary and I had that conversation when he started his chemotherapy. That was one thing he said to me. He's like, look, if my hair starts to fall out and, you know, it gets to that too thin, looks horrible point, you need to tell me. And be honest.
Uh-huh.
honest. I don't want to go around looking like a, you know, literally he said, I don't want to go around looking like a cancer patient, even though that's what he was.
Right.
You know, and that day came, he got up one day, and there on his pillow was a halo of hair. And I walked into the bathroom and picked out his shaving clippers and looked at him, and he said to me, today's the day, isn't it? I said, yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
And,
oh,
you know,
boy.
We stood there and shaved his head.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't anticipate that it would happen in a way of like, oh, my gosh, this is for sure going to happen.
Yeah.
And we didn't, woe is me, oh, my God, you're going to lose your hair and this and that. We mm-hmm. just looked at it like it's a possibility. We have a plan in place, if it does happen, of how he wants to handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And when it did occur, we handled it. We had our little cry. And then we moved on to what's next in the day.
Uh-huh. So he really did. I mean, he wasn't just totally caving into the illness at all in any way from what you're describing.
He did his best not to.
Yeah.
And like I said, I mean, there are times and days when the reality, you know, hits and you just don't maybe have the energy or you do feel, you know, like why me? And you need to honor those moments. This is not about living in denial. It's not about being Pollyanna.
Mm-hmm.
But it is being just as open to the possibility that things may all work out as it is to the possibility that things could get really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Not trying to predict it, being there as much as you can in the moment and enjoying what you have in that day.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I had a really interesting conversation with a friend who has, and this is MS again, and I just asked her if she was open to the idea that she might, like, be totally well at some point again in her life. And guess what? She didn't want to hear that. She was totally into it. You know, her life, she wasn't willing to ever even consider that her health might improve. And she was not living an extraordinary life, let me tell you.
Yeah, and one of the challenges that comes up is that any diagnosis becomes a possibility of a label. And you know that any time we label something, there's knowledge there and there's information there when you label something, but there can also be limitation. So, again, it's not about denying the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, be clear about what's going on. Work with your doctors. Put together your medical team. And this is the approach that I have about chronic illness. It's like a train track. There's two rails that need to be managed. There's the medical, you know, rail, and you have a team for that. And then there's the rail that is your life that's going to go along parallel as you proceed forward day by day, just like every other human being. The only thing is that on one track, you've got a team managing your health. And on this secondary track, you have the opportunity to continue to design and create a life that fits for you in alignment with your passions.
Mm-hmm.
It does take some energy and some awareness and some clarity to do that. But the reality is, if you can find the tools, a lot of which can be found in coaching, some of which can be found in support groups, if you can put some of those tools in place for yourself, then you have the opportunity to actually decrease your stress level, increase your energy level, which then gives you a lot more available resources physically to fight your illness and physically to live your life. So it's really important to, if you can, be open to the possibility that there is a life you can be leading as you go through this journey called My Health Needs Attention Because I Have an Illness.
Mm-hmm.
And so then in the coaching, go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish.
Oh, I was just going to say
when you're coaching them, then how does that work?
We basically take a look at the available energy. We talk about ways to conserve energy. Mm-hmm. We talk about ways that energy is being misused. Too much victim thinking. Too mm-hmm. much blaming. Isolation. You know, some of the key things, and I go through with people and we identify the factors that drop their energy. You know, when in the daytime do you feel low energy? Mm-hmm. Is it because of, you know, having not eaten for a while? Is it because you're, you know, X number of hours out from a treatment? Is it because you took a walk and now your energy level is up a bit and you're feeling better because of, you know, being outside? So we identify what those individual factors are for each person that either drops their energy level or raises their energy level. And then we start to create a schedule and build in more of the events that raise the energy, and we work on whatever is getting in the way of reducing the energy with regards to practical things that we can address, such as thought patterns, victim thinking, that kind of thing. And then also mm-hmm. sometimes they're in the conversation, the patient realizes, and I'm talking about patient when they're mm-hmm. defining themselves in the medical terms, the right. client realizes that as a patient, there's a symptom they've forgotten to tell their doctor, or there's something that's going on that's dropping their energy that they haven't reported back to their medical team. So they take that information from that track over to the other track, and they get some feedback resources and tools to work with that.
Mm. Well, it sounds like it's definitely a process, and sometimes people don't get better, and that's frustrating as well. But at least they have some structure around how to shift their thinking and, you know, how they're feeling. Because what you said, I don't think most people realize that what they're thinking and how they're feeling emotionally really affects even the healing process. So. But we're going to take a short break, and I'm going to read these phone numbers again real quick. Area code 415-287-0074. Another one is 530-413-4520. And I did get a fast chat from someone, but it's not particularly about what we're talking about, but we can address it before the end of the program. So we'll take a short break. And please call in and use Tamara's knowledge about how to deal with chronic illness, because she has a lot of experience in this arena. So we'll be right back.
Radio.com.
Hi, this is Brenda with the Meeting Brenda Speed Coaching Program, and I have a guest here tonight, Tambra Lane, and she specializes in working with people who are living with chronic disease and helping them have an extraordinary life. She just shared a very touching situation with her late husband and how she was his caregiver and how they worked together to create a life that wasn't totally about his illness. We'd love to take your call, so, you know, call in. We'll do a short coaching session with you. You don't have to be shy. You don't even have to give your real name. That's the good news. And there is a feature on the Station 2 page that's called Fast Chat, so I can see what your message is. And actually, somebody also went to the Meeting Brenda website and sent me a message. So please feel free to call in and take advantage of her expertise. And on the break, we were just talking about, my perception is that there seems to be an epidemic of people with chronic disease right now in the United States. And I know we have, you know, like heart disease, lung disease, the regular stuff. And then we have these things like MS, fibromyalgia. There just seems to be a lot more people living with chronic illness. And they definitely talk about it. And I know we're spending a lot of money taking care of people with chronic illness, or they're spending their money taking care of themselves. What do you think about that? Am I dreaming, or do you think this is kind of true?
Well, obviously I don't have statistics to back it up as far as how much, you know, these illnesses played out 20, 25 years ago versus today. Mm-hmm. I feel like what I'm seeing more and more of is talk about survivorship. And, you know, with two definite factors are playing out. People are working much longer under much more stressful circumstances, it seems. And many people are living longer and living longer with chronic illness or having gone through treatment and are, you know, now falling into a category called survivorship, which means that there are large segments of the population whose health, where the health is impacted,
mm-hmm.
and the lifestyle is impacted. And there really is a need for people not only to be caring for their physical well-being, but also their emotional well-being. So, you know, ideally, it would be great, you know, for us to be working on prevention as much as possible, particularly when it comes to things like obesity and, you know, massive levels of being overweight.
Mm-hmm.
If we can start to address health at a young age, and that definitely seems to be something that is chronic in this day and age compared to 20, 25, 30 years ago.
Well, I know that it's not, you know, it's how people handle stress that affects their health, because we all have stressors in our daily life, and we all deal with it differently. So if the same situation occurs in your life and mine, and you're the one who gets sick and I don't, you know, there's a lot of variables that are taking place. There certainly are overall health and genetics and that sort of thing. But, you know, you're talking about people with chronic illness, and that has a huge impact. I mean, just one person affects everybody in their family and everyone they work with, if they're still able to work. I mean, it has this huge ripple effect.
Absolutely. And it can have positive, if you want to call them positive ripple effects, and then it can also, you know, can also be really draining, right?
Right.
One of the one of the positive ripple effects is that, you know, in our situation, Gary modeled great courage to people who knew him. And he modeled a lot of wonderful qualities to me. And as well, it gave other people a chance, particularly as we got further along in the situation and more people became aware, it gave them a chance to contribute by helping out in many, many ways.
Mm-hmm.
So there's opportunity there, but there's also, yes, the, you know, in the work situation, the maybe uncomfortable communication issue.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you ask? What don't you say? You know, is it an elephant in the room? If somebody's missing a lot of work, maybe one person in the workplace handles it really well and just picks up the slack because they would want somebody to do that for them. Maybe somebody else is a little begrudging about it. You know, so there's a,
mm-hmm.
there are a lot of implications to chronic illness. And with the medical team handling the medical side, really where we're left is how are we going to handle the daily living side and do the best we possibly can under maybe very challenging circumstances.
And so when you work with someone, let's say that you were working with a woman whose husband was ill, you know, similar to your situation, would she be part of the coaching process too or not? How does that work?
It can work actually in three different ways. It can just be the person who's been diagnosed with the illness if they want coaching on how to be able to create an extraordinary life, uncover what it is that they want to be up to as far as creating a legacy in every day that they live, which
mm-hmm.
is something I recommend for everybody, chronic illness, no chronic illness, you know, really living your life every day. So it can just be the person diagnosed, or it can just be the caregiver who needs that extra support and needs a place to come and really put their feelings in perspective, understand that process, move through some of the grieving of the pieces that have been lost as a result of,
mm-hmm.
you know, the illness. Sometimes there's been a major financial drain on the family and a lifestyle has been lost. Sometimes sexuality has been lost. The intimacy has been lost. So, you know, coping with those kinds of things and then also learning how to redefine and find different ways of working in the relationship with the person who's ill. And then sometimes it's done together. You'll,
mm-hmm.
for example, like Gary and I were a couple that chose to go through being coached together and separately. Because we had the marriage that was being impacted by the illness.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had each individual. So it's almost like three entities.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me because you and I spoke briefly earlier today, and I'm a widow as well. And, the people that don't die, it's like you feel gypped. You know, you signed up for something, and then you didn't get to finish it. And I mentioned to you that, for me, one of the hardest things about that was because my husband died kind of abruptly, that I had no plans. You know, my plans were gone because we had, you know, plans for probably the next 20 years that didn't get to happen. So I can definitely see why the person involved with the chronically ill person or the person who's seriously ill definitely would need to have coaching because you're coming at it from a whole different place. You're losing too.
Absolutely, and
yeah.
You're not only
losing
the individual.
Loss.
And you know you've been through that experience, and you not only lost the person, but you lost the entity of the marriage, your
uh-huh.
identity as the wife of, and you know, and then in all of that, you go on living, but there's the new self to be defined.
Yeah.
And there's that blank slate. And the blank slate, for most people, is the scariest part.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even if you had if you have a spouse or a partner that was, let's just say that I knew they were going to be sick for the rest of their life, right? So that changes everything, too. I don't even have to lose them physically for my whole life to change as well, because I'm going to be, lots of things that you just addressed are going to be changed in our marriage or our relationship. It's not the same. It's different. And so you have to make that new different situation really work to your advantage. And I think that's where you come in, because a lot of people wouldn't have any clue where to start with that.
You definitely have to walk through a model of transformation when something like this happens. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You need to get very clear about, and I use an inventory system with my clients. We go through and we do what I call the daily external inventory. And we look at everything that's been impacted in the basic needs category by the diagnosis or the ongoing illness, or, if there is a loss, the loss. So food, shelter, clothing, career, where are you in all of that? What needs have been met? What's hanging out there with question marks, and how do you get that addressed? And then moving into more of the what I call the interior emotional landscape, redefining the self now that you're facing this new situation. What is your new relationship with an ill spouse? In all those different levels, as friends, as lovers, as people who are maybe both contributing financially to a relationship and now one person perhaps can't, in the role of caregiver versus, the person with the diagnosis, that's tricky ground sometimes of, stepping over boundaries, trying to make the best decision or the right decision. Even when it comes to nutrition, and there's just some days when there were some days when Gary just wanted ice cream, but we had agreed he was going to be on a certain diet with no sugar, and then I became the bad guy.
Which is not what you signed up to be. Yeah.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So how do you manage those kind of situations? So, and there is grieving and loss to be done when chronic illness hits, because there will be pieces and parts that must be left behind just as a natural part of process. And perhaps some of those things may rebirth again, depending on the journey and the course of the illness. But some things may be lost forever.
Well,
and
are chronically ill that don't have anybody.
Yes.
And that'd be a stinky situation to be in.
It's very important, and working with all my coaching clients, I really stress this. In life, we don't live in a vacuum. And as human beings, we're not meant to live on our own. It doesn't mean we can't have independent lives.
Mm-hmm.
But we are potentially very connected to each and every other person. It takes time and energy to manifest those into real relationships. So that when a situation occurs where, you do face a challenge like this, you have a support network. So as part of responsible living to yourself, and also the gift that you can be to others. In coaching, we look at the opportunity to, check and make sure that our network is there, that we do have a support system, that we do have some safety nets in place. And if not, what common causes, what points of intersection do we have with others where we can step out and start to invest our time and energy into developing those? Because you do not want to find yourself in a situation where you are isolated and on your own if you can help it.
I like the term you use, responsible living.
Yes.
That's interesting. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I haven't heard it myself before. It's an aspect that I came up with as I was developing my coaching model. And it's the, you know, it's the difference between life happening to you and you stepping up instead and being clear about what's working in your life, what's not working in your life. And when you identify what's not working, being responsible and taking the actions you need to take to resolve that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting, and because when you were talking about, you know, living a life of isolation, I mean, you can, sometimes you think about people like that living out in the boonies or someplace by themselves, but, you know, they're sitting right next to you on the subway or behind you at the grocery store. They're everywhere. But I like the idea that, you know, we are responsible for each other, whether we're relatives or not. But, you know, we are. That's why people volunteer and give their time and energy, because they have that awareness that that's responsible living. I really like that concept.
Yes, and it can be as simple as the exchange that you have in the day with each person that comes across your path.
Mm-hmm.
If you step up to the bank teller, you step up to the barista at Starbucks, in that moment, you can responsibly choose the kind of energy that you're going to share with that person.
Right.
And you may not be having the best day in the world, but I guarantee if you take a second and you smile and you ask them about their day, or you wish them well over something, the energy that you will get back will lift yours.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you give and you get. And
that's a little
way to just bring some responsible living in very quickly and very easily.
Well, I'm going to just ask you something about your practice. Do you, maybe I should know this, do you do group coaching for chronically ill people? Have you done that before so they can kind of share things with each other, or is it mostly one-on-one?
I've been doing teleclasses, which have been like audio-guided classes for people, so there hasn't yet been interaction in those groups. And I'm currently in the process of working with several nonprofits as well as some chronic care illness facilities to put in place some group coaching programs. And I also have, you know, set up on my website where people can actually create their own group, and I'll come in and coach on whatever theme that they want. And then
I like that idea.
Yeah, and then I can actually train the group on how to continue on with their circle beyond the coaching agreement, so that they learn the basic tools and approaches with me. We get everybody up and running and integrated into a particular point, and then they're able to co-facilitate each other in being accountable and setting up action plans and staying, you know, present to the mission that they define for themselves or the passion that they define for themselves, so that they can continue reaching for that extraordinary life together.
Yeah, I like the idea of the group. That's why I asked, because I think it could go into the woe is me, feeling sorry for me group, or it could be, you know, applauding everybody's little baby steps they're making and dealing with their life in a better way.
Yes, and there's lots of support groups out there where people have the opportunity to go in and do the bereavement aspect or the grieving aspect of it, and any of the coaching that I do is an action-oriented model, which means we will work with emotions and things that come up. We're not going to negate those. However, part of the process will be getting you in action and in alignment with, you know, what has meaning in your life, so that on those days when the emotional stuff hits, you still have an anchor. You still have something holding you in place that can ground and center you so you can continue to move forward.
Well, it sounds like you're doing really, really good work, and you've been through, you've had quite an experience yourself, you know, with being a caretaker of someone who's chronically ill and then going through that loss process. That's a whole other story. But, you know, it sounds like your practice gives you a lot of satisfaction, and obviously your people are loving working with you.
You know, it's been an absolute honor, and I feel that having the opportunity to witness the strength and the courage and the wisdom that people find when I can be there and just hold the space for them and ask the right questions so that they're able to uncover their own answer and what it is that's going to feed and fuel them in their life, is that's the best day I can have.
Well, this has been just delightful having you on the program tonight, and I want to direct people to the Meeting Brenda website, because the archive of this show and then information about you as well will be posted with your website is, why don't you rattle it off real quick so they know the spelling?
Sure. It's www.coachingbytambra.com. That's all one word. And Tambra is spelled T as in Tom, A, M as in Michael, B as in Bob, R as in Robert, E as in Edward.
And as you said, your practice is, you know, you do teleseminars, you do coaching by phone, and then certainly if you live nearby, you're available for in-person coaching. So thanks again so much, and I look forward to having you on the program again. And I think maybe the next time we'll talk about the grief aspect.
That would be wonderful, Brenda. I would love to. We've got a lot in common, unfortunately.
Yeah,
we'll put it to good.
Yeah, it'll be a good show. So thanks again, and I'm just going to wind up here. Our time this evening is up, and I'd like you to please check the meetingbrenda.com website for more information about the program and the contact information as well. And as I always ask, if you have a special need for a particular type of coach, please fill out the contact form and let me know, because as I said, I know a lot of different kinds of coaches, ones that deal mostly with relationship issues, and I know people who do weight loss coaching, all sorts of different stuff. And next week's guest is Keiko Sue, and she has a coaching practice called Wings for Women, and she works with women who are either in the process or have gone through a divorce, and she knows a lot about this, and she's really delightful. So tune in next week for her, because I think you'll really enjoy the information that she has to share. And since we're getting into the giving season, I'd like you to consider giving the gift of coaching to someone who might benefit from it. What a novel idea. Not the same old sweater or tie. Maybe you have a son or daughter who seems stuck, or maybe you need some help. Whatever, I think giving the gift of coaching would be a great idea. And the meetingbrenda.com website has my link for my coaching practice, which is Your Life is an Adventure. So you can email me and let me know what I can help you with. And thanks so much for sharing your lives with us tonight. I'm looking forward to next week and more opportunities to work with you. And just remember that life is an adventure, and there's more than one road to the finish line. Good night.